Members, do we all have the agenda in front of us? I believe today we have a joint meeting with the select committee and ourselves. And according to the agenda, we are going to have just two items. That is the discussion of the choice on termination of pregnancy amendment bill and the discussion on prevention and combating of trafficking in persons bill. I don't think we should take long. Let's try and be quick and fast because some of us also have an interest to attend another meeting. I know there's a women's caucus. Can I check the other meeting? What time do you have the other meeting? So I would appreciate if we don't go as far as one. Let's just try and move fast. It's just two items that we are dealing with. But maybe it's important to say why we are dealing with the first item on the agenda. We had a letter from the private members committee saying that we should give our view on the matter. Apparently there is somebody that I think it's ACDP. Yes, they presented something to the to that committee. So we need to have our share as a committee. How we see the pity, I don't have the proposals with me that she has raised pertaining to the amendment that she's seeking for. But we trust then we'll have someone from. Is there someone that's taking us through the termination? Crystal will take us through, and then from there we'll have discussions after Crystal has taken us through. Are you not far there, Crystal? Sure. Why don't you come closer next to us? My ears are not too good. Morning, Duncan.
Good morning.
Just started, you're not very late. Do we have what the Honorable member from the ACDP has submitted? Do we have it? Do we all have it? Oh. Can you take us through Crystal?
Thank you, Chief. I don't think everyone's got this document in front of them, which is the proposed amendment. I think the first thing you need to point out is that it's not a bill. It's a member's legislative proposal. It hasn't been introduced as a bill in the bottom. It's just a proposal being made by a member to introduce legislation. So the private member's legislative bill. Then we're only looking. The proposed amendment is only in terms of Section 3 of the Choice of Termination of Pregnancy Act. So it's not the whole Act, it's only that specific section where certain inclusions are being proposed. So we'll go through that. In the handout that you have there, It just says, it's just a short overview of the Act in terms of why we have the Choice and Termination of Pregnancy Act. And then also in terms of the legislative amendment, what it seeks to do is to ensure that a woman or child is able to make a fully informed choice regarding the termination of pregnancy. And that falls under Section 3 of the Act. If you turn the page, there's a table there. What I've done is listed the current provisions under Section 3 of the Act, and then next to that included the proposed amendment, so that members can just see what the proposed changes are. And in the last column, it's just a short overview of inputs and submissions that were made on the proposed amendment. The only submissions that I've been able to look at is the ones made on the 28th of May and 4th of June this year to the members, seven members, Legislative Proposals Committee. And those were by the South African Human Rights Commission, the Centre for Applied Legal Studies, the CGE, and the Department of Health. So if we look at the middle column, which then looks at the proposed amendment, what the member is proposing is that the following things be included under the place at which a termination may take place. So it first says that the patient has access to ultrasound, or that the facility has access to ultrasound equipment, which must be used to accurately determine the gestation period prior to the termination of pregnancy, and secondly, to provide relevant information as to the state of the development of the unborn child, thereby assisting the mother to make an informed choice. Secondly, gives counselling, which must comply with Regulation 7 of the regulations made under the Principal Act, and provides full opportunity for discussion and questions, provides sufficient information, including electronic pictures, or diagrams and photographs, to enable the woman or child to understand the development of the unborn child. Fourthly, counseling, which includes discussion of the extent of the risks involved in continuing the pregnancy, assess against the risks for termination, which include breast cancer, depression, and future difficulties in conceiving and bearing children, and lastly, available alternatives to abortion, including adoption and the state and other support available to the mother. So those are the proposed inclusions under Section 3 of the Choice and Termination of Pregnancy Act. When looking at the submissions that were made, certain things came up as to whether people were in approval or whether they had concerns regarding the approval of such an amendment. The first thing that was raised was that this provision is saying that there must be ultrasound equipment at all these facilities. Firstly, ultrasound equipment is costly, is something that is raised by submissions, and it places a financial burden on institutions which provide termination of pregnancy services. So that could, in effect, then also impact on people's accessibility, because if an institution or a centre cannot afford the ultrasound equipment, or they have to get the equipment and it's costly to them, it could impact on their feasibility and whether they would be able to remain open and providing services to women, reproductive health services to women. Secondly, the key thing that was raised was that all the submissions basically agree that women must have access to sufficient information to make informed choices. But the concerns were raised around with the use of photographs and electronic pictures being shown to the person coming for the termination of pregnancy, and the impact that would have on the person, whether it wouldn't place more trauma on an already emotionally emotionally traumatized person. I mean, the Center for Applied Legal Studies specifically pointed out that this proposed revision was in contradiction of the Act, and the Act bounds the state to provide reproductive health and safe conditions under which the right of choice would be exercised without fear or harm. So we just need to look at whether, if someone has to view these pictures, is their right to accessing the service without fear or harm or any form of intimidation not being infringed. One of the things that the CGE raised in their submission was that specific reference must be made to the levels of skills required in facilities, because it leaves, it's very broad. It just gives access to medical and nursing staff, and they feel that there should be a specific requirement looking at, or provision looking at the training of staff providing those services. There was also input by the Human Rights Commission, which said that we had existing legislation, and what actually is needed is that means that the existing act needs to be better implemented and regulated, and that there's not necessarily a need for an amendment to be made, because these services are provided. It's just that in the implementation there are things that are in most cases not costed for and not regulated, so that's what needs to be looked at. Also, one of the things that was raised was that the proposed amendment looks at having a discussion on the extent of risks involved, and there it speaks about breast cancer, depression, and future difficulties in conceiving and bearing children. Now, we know that there have been things or studies done in terms of looking at depression and future difficulties, and that we cannot make the assumption that having a termination will result in those things, and especially when it relates to breast cancer. Is there a link? Do we know whether there's a link? Has that been studied? Is there any research that indicates to that? Then another very important thing that was raised was that this proposed amendment uses the term unborn child, whereas in the Act it refers to the fetus. Now, the court and legislation does not recognize the fetus as an unborn child. It refers to the fetus, not as an unborn child. And I've included the case that was up to the law that the fetus is not considered a child in South African law and doesn't possess any rights. So that is the basis for that. And then also Human Rights Commission expressed the view that the decision to undergo termination of pregnancy is already a difficult one. And the Act provides that women coming for the service need to provide enough reason for them wanting to have the service. So it's not just I come and I say I want to have termination of pregnancy. I need to provide concrete reasons for why. And that is provided for in the Act. So to really go through that process and then have further emotional burden and trauma in the case of the counseling, which is now wanting to enforce that women be shown pictures and those things of the fetus would increase the emotional burden. Also, if we look at the bill, in the object of the bill, on the last page there, it says that point 2C, the object of the bill is to ensure that the state and private healthcare operators are protected from legal action for damages alleging failure to obtain informed consent as a result of inadequate counselling. And there's currently a suit before the Western Cape High Court where a plaintiff is alleging that she wasn't provided with the counselling necessary to give her informed consent and that she wasn't informed of the stage of development of her unborn child. Now, the submissions raise the question as to is this proposed amendment based on that single isolated incident? Because we cannot assume that this is happening everywhere and then propose this amendment. If the basis for the proposed amendment is this single incident, then that is not enough. Then it needs to be dealt with that organization specifically and not with the Act as a whole. So I think things that we need to look at in terms of potential implication if this amendment is then taken forward, specifically in terms of women, is then will women not experience secondary trauma through having to view images of the fetus? Does the amendment impact on women's right to choice, because it also speaks about providing information on alternatives in the case of adoption and other support services, and related to that, then I made that point about that, dissuade women from termination by including discussion on alternatives. And it's not to say that those alternatives shouldn't be discussed, but we also need to take into consideration what the state of of those services are within the country. We have loads of children that aren't being adopted and all those things. I'm not saying, yes, everyone must go and have a termination of pregnancy, but we need to weigh up what are the deaths of a woman in terms of choices that she can make in terms of that. And then lastly, does the amendment limit women's access? Because if we're saying a facility can only provide the service if they have ultrasound equipment, and if they don't have the equipment, then there's nothing for that woman, and the services can't be provided, they obviously not also limiting women's access. So this is just highlighting the proposed amendment and the provisions made under that, and then also the submissions made by the various institutions and potential implications for women. So, comments and questions.
Thank you very much. Perhaps before one makes a contribution, can we open this to members? But the main key here on this whole issue is that one, I also have a problem whether the whole proposal is really brought about because of the one incident, that is a bit problematic for us or for me, and that the bill strictly talks about a choice, and for me that is key. But let us open for discussion and hear what other members would say and what they would contribute towards the proposal. Can we open it just for discussion and let's hear other people's views? Not unless Honourable Mamba has something, maybe I can give it a chance for now.
Thanks, but I think I will come last. Let's give members an opportunity to make contributions.
Can I have hands? Honourable Dorothy, Honourable Kitane. Is there another hand? Honourable Duncan, Honourable Pearl. We have four hands for now. That's the last one, five for now.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for putting together these comments by other stakeholders.
But maybe before you start, Honourable Dorothy, I'm just wondering, whatever concerns and whatever questions we have, who are we questioning? Because the person in question is not here. I think that's another problem. But maybe for our first round, it's good. Maybe in our next meeting, then we could have the person in question to come and respond to some of the of the questions and concerns.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thank the presenter and also okay, going straight to questions, as you have already indicated today, to who are we posing this question to? I think one would largely agree with your comment, you know, to say that on what other basis are we wanting to amend, except for the one that was only mentioned. And if that is the only one, then for me, I think, you know, it's very costly, you know, to come up with a bill. And really to consider one incident giving also, you know, the reasons, which is the only one reason. But then also coming back to the amendments here, already it's true that, you know, some of the equipments won't be available in other institutions. And I don't see quite, you know, vast differences between the proposed amendments and the current ones, unless we're convinced by these proposed amendments vis-a-vis the current provisions of Section 3, then perhaps one would concur with that. But I agree that really, as you've already indicated, I'm also not convinced that this bill can be amended given, you know, one incident.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't know, I'm a little bit confused. I don't know. Maybe it's my understanding. Because when I'm looking at these proposed amendments and also the input submission, whatever, I don't see any differences between the bill that we have. For example, Chairperson, if you talk about the result submission, talk about the ultrasound equipment, it's costly, it's financial, but whatever. Yes, I understand. But in most of the hospitals, Chairperson, they have that equipment, the ultrasound. They use it. And I don't see any difference. And this choice of termination is already being implemented and it's already done in the hospital. And they've got the equipment at the hospital. But I don't know, maybe the one will convince us about the changes, whatever. But when I'm looking at this, I don't. For example, when you talk about the give access to an operating theater, it's already done there. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking other way around. I don't know. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to maybe just thank Crystal for the presentation. It was quite clear and they've done stunning work again. And then also, like you said, Chairperson, the people in question is not here. That is actually what I wanted to raise, because who do I now, you know, ask questions to? However, I will give my opinion at this point in time on the comments made by certain people. Now, I would want to agree with the Human Rights Commission, where they say that the current bill needs to be better implemented and even costed. I mean, very often in this portfolio committee, when we deal with acts and bills and all of it, then we always say, and I believe that when we focus more on implementation and also ensuring that the actual act is financed, because when we talk about an act being costed, people think it is automatically financed, which is not the case. So I think that those two areas are important for me. And then also it is important that when we have our girls and women going for abortions, that they do make informed choices. I don't think it has anything to do with the ultrasound, really. So I am not quite, I mean, I am not supportive personally on that particular amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member.
Me? Yep, on the airline.
Thank you, Chair. Following your comment and the last word, that if we ask questions, who will we be asking questions from? Because mine was going to be a question based on what are the actual requirements of the Act. one who comes and asks for termination of pregnancy, what has she got to, or the procedure that she has got to follow? But since there is no one, I'll reserve that one. I mean, that was going to be my question. Thank you. Sorry.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, when I see these bills, these termination of pregnancy, you know, this was passed, this bill in the last term of Parliament. Mm-hmm. It was quite hot because there were many members of religious grounds against it and for it. And anyway, certain parties allowed a free vote so you could go according to your conscience. But now, you know, a lot of the abortions aren't done necessarily in state hospitals or whatever. You've got an organization like Mari Stokes, I'm just mentioning the name, they do a lot. And other outside people, you know, it would be very interesting to have a person like that here to state, A, is it feasible to have this ultrasound equipment? They say, no, it's not. It would be interesting seeing that a lot are performed there in state hospitals. Yes, they probably have this equipment and are complying with it. It's always a good thing to tighten up a little bit on the regulations and giving the woman a choice that, you know, that she knows what she's in for. But it would be a good idea, you know, if we could get a bit of input from other organizations that are carrying out abortions, because I think a lot are also done there, especially in the rural areas. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Chairperson,
yes. I think maybe our researchers, maybe to ask whether they can, or whether there is any stats on the women that goes for abortions and girls that goes for abortions, the reason as to why. Because I think that that is going to play a major role. The perception might be very often that it is women that's been raped, you know, that goes for abortion. And it's not necessarily the case. There are other reasons too, but I think for it would be good if our researchers could help us to find maybe statistics on what the reasons are and of already cases that of the already abortions that took place, because that will also give us a clear understanding. Just to add on to Daryl, that when we do get in other organizations or private sector, for instance, private hospitals, that we could ask their view as well. Although I think that I think that we can then have a clearer picture to talk about the ultrasound, whether, because in a case of when a girl is raped, it is a matter of you know, second being traumatized, the second time around by having to see on the ultrasound, you know, there's the unwanted baby. And of course that is going to traumatize that woman further. So that is just my suggestion, and if we could perhaps have it as soon as possible. And then the other thing, I would like us as a committee chairperson to have the whole bill, not just the amendment, but to go through that bill so that we can have a complete, clear understanding and maybe have a session on it, as much as the other bill that we're going to talk to, the combating of trafficking, rather than just the amendment stage.
Just if you have it in my log. I think it won't cause any harm. You know, whoever proposed that we should amend this, maybe we should not amend this in isolation of other sections. I will tell you why. My members will agree with me from the NCOP. We've recently visited health facilities in the Eastern Cape, and we mainly went there on infant mortality rate. Mm-hmm. And they have said to us one of the contributing factors to that is the illegal abortions. Mm-hmm. And that everybody is just taking advantage of that, you know. I think we also need to, in addition, state that whoever performs an abortion, it should be a registered medical facility, or I don't know how we can put that into context, because of most people are just taking advantage of that. They just advertise their illegal clinics, and whether people are not educated about this legislation or not, I think it's something that we still need to review, because it is there free of charge, you know, in our public hospitals. But you find that young people are still not using the facilities that we have made available for them to use. So, Chair, I don't think it will cause any harm, you know, for us to actually review, like what we did with the Domestic Violence Act. Maybe call for public hearings and check whether this law is really serving its purpose. Are people using it accordingly? What are the loopholes? What is it that government can do in order to make sure that it actually serves the correct purpose? Because, again, you know, it's disturbing to hear that you will find a 16-year-old coming more than 3 times a year to come and perform. I mean, really, morally, it is not correct, and health-wise as well, I think. So I think young people need to be educated, you know. We still lack that. We need to educate people about this law. It's a good law. I agree with Daryl that it's one of the laws that it wasn't easy for Parliament to pass. I remember I participated a lot, you know, at ground level. You know, we had different opinions and all that. And it was mainly made for special cases. But people are abusing this. And now we have people who are foreign nationals. I'm not being...
xenophobic.
No, it's not xenophobic. We need to find another way of not accepting. It's not xenophobic phobia. If you are afraid of something, xeno is something else. We need to define that as well in the Democrat. But I'm saying really, in real life, you find those adverts all over. You want to perform. So I don't know. I want to propose to this sitting, to this committee, that maybe there's a need for us to really review the entire legislation and call for public hearings, and people should come and make submissions. I don't know what will that take, but I know it's doable, it's possible. We did that with the Domestic Violence Act. So maybe if the joint committees could also consider that. That's my submission. Thank you.
Thanks. I wonder if perhaps it would not be better to say, let's make a proposal to the Portfolio Committee of Health and the Select Committee to call public hearings on this, since the bill falls under health, and then we become part of those hearings to give our share, but not, you know, take the entire responsibility, because it might hit us, you know, financially. Maybe we should make a proposal to the Select and the Portfolio Committee. But I think as the two committees, perhaps we could raise our concerns, as the Honorable Mabe has said, that the bill is somehow open to abuse, but I don't know how we could limit that, whether we could say we put a limitation to the abortion, to that particular individual. But again, if we limit, they will still go and do backstreet abortion and will come up with the same problem again. Okay, can I have the Honourable Member, I'm not sure of your...
Darrell Worth.
Darrell Worth. Is that one word?
No, it's the name and...
Oh, the Honourable Worth.
As in Woolworth,
okay. Oh, as in Woolworth.
No family.
Okay.
Thank
and
you.
The yes. Honourable Member next to you and Honourable Duncan.
Thanks, Chair. I must support those proposals. I think we can have a look again. But I would suggest that if you open the whole bill again to a public inquiry, you're going to have church organizations, you're going to have a person off the street, everybody coming. You will never end with it. I suggest it should be restricted in the form to clinics or persons who are already doing abortions, not state hospitals. To that, maybe doctors, gynecologists, that sort of thing. In that, but I think if you open it to everybody, you're going to be sitting for weeks. You're going to have every church organization, every human rights organization, you're going to have everybody descending on you. So I think you must restrict it to the bill and to see whether if it is necessary to refine it in certain areas or improve it. But I think to open it to the whole public, advertise in the paper, you're going to be sitting here for weeks.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I also support the proposal. But in addition, I would say, since there is some abuse, some illegal people who are conducting the procedure, we could also probably hear from the law enforcement agencies what is being done. Are they taking any steps towards such people? Because these are adverts, they are there, and anybody can see them, including the law enforcement agency. What steps are they taking to such people? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with my colleague Daryl that we do not open up a can of worms. And I'm calling it that. I would, however, want to know when was the last public hearings on this bill. And then second to that, I think what the problem is here with most of the acts, people are not properly informed. And I think that our NGOs need to play a far better role. I always believe that the NGOs is the arm lengthening and strengthening of government closer to the people. And I think that what we should do, instead of having a public hearing again, that we have a meeting with our NGOs, ensuring that through the NGOs our communities are informed, that there is a set of meetings held by mothers and parents and young people, so that we ensure that they know what this bill is all about. And that will ensure that when they do when they do make the decision to have an abortion, they know what it is all about. Then they are going to make an informed decision. But I really don't think that a public participation process is going to and a revisit is going to give us what we're actually looking for. Because I understand what the chairperson Mavi is saying, that it's been abused, but it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the bill. It more has to do with NGOs and government and our communities not taking responsibility from that side. So my proposal is that we rather meet with the NGOs as the two committees, even with together with health, and see how we're going to do it, and ask for them to strengthen our hand in getting the message out to the people. Thank you.
I think I missed you, Honourable Pope.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I wanted to say solely that my questions were covered. I agree fully with Comrade Honorable Mabi when she says the bill is really has been abused. Because really when I look at this thing here, which is really confusing me now, that a fetus is not considered a child in the South African law. What is all that? A fetus lives. And really, having the public participation, it could help us somehow or other, although they say the honorable that we're going to open up things for him. I don't know.
No, but we should.
I don't understand, ma'am, when you say we can't go there. What do you mean? Because the very same law that we have, the very same law, is actually causing a lot of harm. So if you think we can't go there, I don't know. Maybe you must explain to us why you think that.
Chairperson, I'm saying it because there was only this, if I'm right, this submission that we're discussing here today, that we're looking at the ultrasounds and all of it. There was public hearings on it, was there? Mm-hmm. On the termination of?
No.
Not? Okay. Was there never?
No.
Public hearings prior to that. Okay, why I'm saying that is, for instance, my colleague saying that a fetus is not a child. If you've listened, I'm going to use the example of, I don't know if you listened to special assignment last night about the pornography. You see, I don't want any confusion because we can't speak from an individual point of view. This law wasn't set there from an individual point of view, it was set there by quite a lot of stakeholders. So people are already confused. I think what we need to understand is, and what process we can rather lead is to get this bill, get people acquainted with this bill, that they understand what the bill is all about. That is important for us to, whether we differ here with each other, or like the churches and organizations differ around us. It is a matter of fact, it is there. Ensure that the people are acquainted with the, and I'm putting it across like that.
I think I will agree with any view that says this is not our baby. It is health, like what Honorable Thompson has said. I think I will support that view. And I think as lawmakers, we have an obligation to go back to the people. Whether it's something that is working or that is not working, we still have that obligation to go back to the people and check whether this law is working for them, are there problems, there's nothing wrong with it. As to whether it will bring churches and all that, we can always say we should set what is the time frames on everything that we do. There's nothing wrong with that. I think there's a need for us to review, to check whether this is being implemented as it's supposed to be implemented. But I think what Honorable Thompson has said, maybe we need to do proper planning before we can even try and go out and invite for comments and all that. But also not taking the responsibility away from health. So that view I will support. But I think about us reviewing, it's about time that we do that.
Thanks, Chair. You know, I think as we agree, we are putting across different views. And what I was going to be talking to is after the Honourable Member there said that perhaps we could only invite, you know, relevant participants to the subject. But I also want to question that, you know, the bill, whilst one really share the view that during that time, we all know that it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult to the extent that even the House, mm-hmm. some abstained, you know, in the House. So whilst we are putting all those, together, I think there'll be a need for us really to, including also, the fact that this belongs to health. There will be a need to be very careful, very, very careful not to exclude other participants because already we have problems, and let us not add more problems, because if I was part of formulation of this and then the next time I'm not being included, you know, in participating, it may, you know, cause us a lot of other unnecessary, you know, problems. But I want to agree that yes, this is health must be brought in, but I think perhaps we should also be advised, you know, legally, whether we want to be, you know, opening ourselves, you know, which is to a lot of
Yeah, you seem to want to say something.
Yes, ma'am. I know this is a very emotional issue, but I think we need to separate two issues here. The first is the public hearing that I propose, or that there needs to be some sort of meeting with stakeholders, etc. And then what is expected of this committee or both committees in the submission or the request of information from the committee on private members' legislative proposal. They, in terms of the request, it comes down to requesting this committee and the select committee as well to give input in terms of the proposal and what the implications would be for women, because that committee would also then have sent a request for information or their opinion from the committee on health as well. So ours is just to establish what are the implications for women, write an opinion on those implications for women, and then that would be the end of our task. Whether the committee then proceeds with public hearings and whether the act is implemented properly or whether it's been cost, that's a whole separate issue. Ours is just to look at those specific recommendations, because it's not a bill yet. This is a member who has come forth and said, this is what I think should happen, or how the legislation should be changed. Once that is done, the recommendations from various interested parties, which would be the portfolio committees or the select committee, that can happen. And then that the committee on private members' legislative proposals then makes a recommendation that goes to the speaker, and the speaker decides whether it needs to be sent to become a bill or not.
For that information, in short, you're advising us that let us stick to what we have been asked to do. Perhaps after we have made our view and our suggestions to private members, then as a committee we can then do what we are talking about. But for now, I think I would support the advice you are giving us. Let us put a view on the issues that have been raised by this individual member. We submit that to private members. Perhaps after that, then we can engage with health, the portfolio of health, to say in our view, blah, 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 can we look at that? But let's not engage on that now. It will, you know, you may not even be able to afford it as a committee, as the two committees. So let's put our view, because even what the Honorable Pearl is raising, that is according to South African laws. That says an unborn child, it's not an unborn child, it's called a fetus. You see, that could be debatable, but not at this stage. Because even if you look at, I'm not sure, maybe what also I would suggest is that I would support the suggestion that, I mean, it shouldn't look like we are just, you know, doing a quick, haphazard job. I would support that we call the concerned people, together with the Honourable Member Dudley in our next meeting, just to ascertain whether what she claims is really the truth or not. You understand what I mean? The issue of the ultrasound and all that. Because even if you look at the reason of the person, Zina Chile, really, it's uncalled for. I mean, how do you go for an abortion, and then you after that you claim you are not counseled properly? For me, it doesn't really hold water. she knew what she went there for. And I assume she knew the consequences. So she, but I don't want to get there because, you know, if it was possible, but I don't want us to even get there. I would suggest that we even call her and near her side, but I don't even think it's necessary. So at this stage, I would support that we call like people like Mary Stokes and, sorry, maybe health, and we discuss it. From there, we take our view and we submit it to the concerned committee. I don't know whether that makes sense. If I could just get support on that, and then we'll move forward.
I think members of
Honorable G.
Chair,
we agree. So,
are we all
agree?
Yeah.
So we'll move forward on that note. Krista? I just want to check in. We submit something to the private members committee just to say that we are considering it and we were, you know, having further meetings on the issue before we are able to give our input into the proposed amendment, because we can't say that whether we agree or disagree.
On this one or on a subclass,
well, what they were asking for was the committee's input into the process. But if we say that we want to have another meeting first with other organizations and with the Department of Health to hear their inputs before we make an input on what has been proposed, then we need to send something to that committee to say that that is the process we will be following before we are able to give them an input on this.
Yeah, let's make a sensible decision here. Maybe is it even necessary for us to do that? Or do we just call the person in question, that is the Honorable Dudley, perhaps, and but maybe it is, just to check whether what she's saying is correct. But I'm subject to correction.
I think from what Gary has advised us on, that we need to deal with this matter in two ways. One is that as a select committee and as a portfolio, we first consider the submissions by the member. Then later, we then deal with another process where then we're going to involve all relevant stakeholders. I think that's how we're going to treat it. But now the question with this is that the person in question is not present here. So we are unable to question so that we can make our own inputs. So it means what we need to do first is to first deal with this, make sure that in the next meeting we invite the relevant person, we engage with that person, then we make submissions. Then later we then continue with our meeting. But then that does not stop you to then start making prior arrangements in terms of the second process. Processes can run parallel. I think we don't have time.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out the process, the correct procedure for in response to matters, you know, pertaining to this one, because I think we have given our inputs in this meeting. So is that not a response to that particular I just want to clarify on the request. Yeah, to that particular request, are we still needing to call the person who submitted? Is that a procedure? Because I think we have done our input, you know, to, in my opinion, yes.
I think we are losing a point slightly. Yeah. I think you're correct. Because let's not create more unnecessary work for ourselves. We have been asked by private member to make our share on the proposed amendments. Let's just stick to that, submit it to them. Then if there are any further movements, we'll take it from there. I think let's do it that way. I mean, this, I don't think it's for us really to actually go and check whether Marie Stoll sells the ultrasounds and all that. That we can deal with that after we have engaged with the Department of, with the health portfolio. Sorry? That is the second process the Honourable Mother is talking about. For now, I think we have our answers. We'll submit it to private members. Let's end it there. I think we almost got confused here.
Chairperson, so how is it going to read? Because I need to know how it's going to read. I have personally given my how I feel about it, the amendment. I do not support the amendment. And yes, maybe it will be good if we can see the person, but but for now, I'm not supporting the recommendation.
I'm not sure whether you are ready to really now say how it's going to read.
Consensus whether the committees agree or don't agree to it, and then if we do, these are the reasons, and we've got the things here. Or if we don't support it, these are the reservations that the committees have. From what the input that has been weighed, we can put them together, but we need to say, does the committee, or do the committee support or reject it?
I think the Honourable Duncan just wants to know how is it going to read. Maybe let's say this. You have heard our views. You put it in your own good English, and then you I don't know how you are going to. You circulate it. You will all go through it, and if we agree, we will convey that to you, and then you send it over. Let's not make it complicated.
Thanks. Do we support or do we?
No, we don't support.
Okay.
Maybe let's do it formally. Let's do it formally.
I propose that we do not support the recommendation.
And I support it.
I think we are done with that one. Thanks. Dr. Lukhara, are you confused? Mukhara, are you fine?
No, I was a bit confused, but I mean, the decision is already taken. I was going to. I'm confused at this point that we are saying we are not supporting it. Whilst on the other hand, it seems we are still making some inquiries. That's where I've got the dilemma.
I think we all agree that for now we respond to what has been asked by private members, but we are then saying we will deal with the nitty-gritties at a later stage. That is, will be the second process, because we do all agree that it's being abused, blah, blah, blah. So it does need attention. But we will do that at a later stage, not now. Because we can't hold those people who have asked us to submit to them and say, no, we're still calling public hearings and all that. It will be out of order for us to do that as the two committees. Because they will say, we didn't ask you to call for public hearings. All we want to know is your views on these amendments. You get the point?
I do.
Thank you.
My name, let me just refresh your mind. It's not Lekoro. Mokoro. All these boys, Lekoro, Sekoro, what when they come from Mokoro?
I think I get it. That the Mokoro.
Mokoro, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
See, your member can read you because she could see you are confused.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Can we move to the second item? The second item is this prevention and combating of trafficking in persons. I should think it's almost the same process that we are going to use, though it's not from the private members. I guess here we are. Oh, firstly, let me say we attended the hearings that took place on this with the Portfolio Committee on Justice. So as people that are dealing with these vulnerable groups, we felt we had to be part of the hearings. So some of us attended the hearings, we heard the views, the submissions. I think the process for now for us is to make our views on the matter and we submit it to justice. Am I correct?
Yes, Chairperson. According, these were checked for us because the bill was sent to justice in terms of the votes. Only their members would be able to vote. But in terms of deliberations, we would have the opportunity to give input in terms of when they go through clause by clause. So today's session is just to provide members with an overview of what were the issues raised and some of the concerns, challenges and gaps.
Then I would suggest that we listen to the concerns, the challenges. I'm sure you captured them. Those are going to assist us when we take part again in the next meeting of justice. Next? Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Did you give us information on paper?
There seems to be a problem with getting it onto the overhead, so I'll go through slide by slide on the PowerPoint presentation. So you've handed out two documents. The first document covers the PowerPoint presentation and looks at an overview of key matters related to the bill. The second document is a Word document which captures what I've done in relation to the bill pertaining to children's issues, and Gary and I work on the bill together, so Gary will provide issues pertaining to gendered perspective on the bill. But for now, we'll focus on the PowerPoint presentation. So turning to the second slide, in terms of the human rights violation, it just captures what are the key violations that occur for victims or traffickers. In terms of treaty compliance, the three key treaties which has an effect and a bearing on this particular bill. In terms of children, it's the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child that prohibits trafficking. The African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child also prohibits trafficking. And then South Africa also has ratified the Palermo Protocol, which focuses particularly on trafficking. So we, in so doing, South Africa has an obligation to look at how we take that international treaty and ensure that it's implemented within domestic legislation. So the creation of this particular bill is part of the compliance with the treaty. Then just looking at the third slide, the overview of trafficking, in terms of types of trafficking and causes, just generally in terms of research that has been conducted, the various forms of trafficking for the purposes of sexual exploitation, labor, slavery, adoption, and removal of body parts. In terms of causes, we've heard through the submissions made that victims of trafficking become victims due to various reasons, due because of poverty, violence perpetrated against women and children, placing them at particular vulnerable places, and violence, concealment of incest and rape, victims coming on conflict, countries are particularly vulnerable, natural disasters, and also of late research has shown that in terms of the impact of the HIV/AIDS pandemic, particularly for orphans who are vulnerable because of parents who have died of HIV/AIDS, they too are at a higher risk of trafficking. The next slide just gives you a synopsis of the global sex tourism destinations, and the highlighted areas indicate where the, in terms of countries where persons are trafficked to and from. And in terms of South Africa, it's the destination 4 and 2 in terms of trafficking. So then focusing on the crux of today's presentation, which is around challenges and gaps. On the whole, we've seen that the current bill has a particularly skewed emphasis on cross-border trafficking. There's much more emphasis placed on victims who are trafficked into and out of the country, and a greater emphasis on trafficking for the purposes of sexual exploitation. A key concern is that the bill to date has not been costed, and that has huge implications if we look at proposed provisions around what they would want to be have in place around services. And we've seen in terms of our public hearings around the Domestic Violence Act, when a bill is not costed, the implementation, the challenges there to its members. In terms of housing and shelter, the provisions are minimal. Again, what are the implications for once a victim has been trafficked and identified for services, where would they go to? Support services for victims, overall in the world, that requires strengthening, particularly access to health care. We will go on later in terms of chapter by chapter where the particular provisions lie, but this is just an overall. In terms of what's absent in the bill, there are provisions for children, but there's no provision for once a child's been identified as a victim of trafficking, what happens when that child reaches age 18? And the case around the trafficking has still not been concluded. A glaring absence is that our department, for which we have oversight over, the Department for Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, is not mentioned at all in the bill. Initially, we thought because it was brought about before the promulgation of new departments, that is why the department was omitted, but the department looking at performance monitoring and evaluation is indicated. So clearly it's an omission. Again, in terms of who takes the lead role, who's the lead department in terms of spearheading this particular bill, that's unclear. They highlight the role of justice, role of social development, role of police, but there's no indication as to who will take this bill forward ultimately. There's very minimal provisions around interpretation services. Again, if you're looking at dealing with victims, or been trafficked from different countries who don't speak one of South Africa's 11 languages. In terms of training norms and standards, there is definitely an absence. The bill requires several officials to be able to do particular things, whether it's identify, to an assessment, refer, but there are no provisions that look at who will do this, when will this be done, and also time frames. If the bill is to be implemented, by when do we expect these particular officials to be trained, and who will take responsibility for that? In terms of the information systems, overall that's problematic. It places a large emphasis on the NGOs to be responsible for the recording and the noting of statistics in relation to trafficking, which is unrealistic, even though service providers in terms of NGOs are currently involved in working with victims of trafficking. There cannot be an expectation that they too now have to take administrative role in terms of recording this. That shouldn't be the key people responsible. The last two key issues which were raised, consistency within the submissions, was the matter pertaining to Botswana and prostitution. And on that, I'm going to hand over to Gary, just to give input.
Thank you, members. This was going to be part of the second part of the presentation that deals specifically with women and with young girls. In terms of Okutwala, I'm probably going to be crucified for saying this by certain organizations and institutions, but I don't see the part of the issue of Okutwala being a real big issue in terms of the implementation of the act, because it is up to the courts to determine whether the definition of trafficking, or whether a certain set of facts is indeed trafficking, or whether it's a Botswana. Let me give a very simple example. If a doctor cuts someone, according to the legal definition of assault or assault GBH, it qualifies. But not everyone goes and running to the court and saying, oh, the doctor cut me because he needed to remove a nail, or he needed to get to my arm so he can operate. So if a certain set of facts presents itself, as such, there is yet no crime or a legal definition for crime, as I said, of Okutwala. So I think from the get-go, it's a non-issue. But just to take the members in through the whole issue of Okutwala, certain submissions that were made found that that the definition of trafficking as it stands now needs some sort of description of the practice of Okutwala, which the certain submissions also felt that it should, that the issue of Okutwala, whether it is right or whether it is wrong, should be dealt with in a separate piece of legislation, not in this piece of legislation. And that piece of legislation should then have recognition, or should recognize certain cultural issues and certain societal issues. But as I said, in terms of the implementation of this act, it would be up to the court to decide whether, on the basis of certain facts, whether it is Okutwala or whether it is indeed trafficking.
Sorry, Gary, just before you move forward, is your argument here saying that Okutwala is not trafficking?
I'm going to give a very legal response and say that I would not like to answer, because it's going to be one of my personal views. I mean, if the committee wants to hear my personal view, then I'm welcome to give it. But in my, I'll give it anyway. My personal opinion that Okutwala is trafficking. It meets the description. We have to look at the age of the girls, and also one has to then take into account the Marriage Act as well. The Marriage Act specifically says that children under the age of 16 cannot get married on their own. I mean, if they do get married, that marriage is null and void. It does not exist for the purposes of South African law. It might exist in the customs, but we have the Customary Marriages Act. And that sets specific criteria as well. So we have those protections to get, you know, in terms of Okutwala. But my personal opinion is that Okutwala meets the requirement and certain criteria for trafficking, and as such, it should be dealt with. But I do agree also that there needs to be separate legislation that deals specifically with the kafala, not in the flat. Sorry, and then in terms of prostitution, one of the gaps in terms of the protections afforded to women is that there seems to be a contradiction between the law relating to sex work or to prostitution and the proposals in this bill, because sex work or prostitution, whichever definition you choose to use or word you choose to use, is outlawed in South Africa. And the problem is that with trafficking, it provides there's an overemphasis on trafficking for sexual exploitation or for sex work or for prostitution. And as such, the services provided by social development, by health, by police, or by any service provider speaks mostly to, and that's also one of the gaps that Kashi will probably pick up later, is that most of the services provided by the relevant departments or service providers speak to when a woman or a man or a child is trafficked for sexual purposes. It doesn't speak to labor. So one would assume then from the rest of the act that that sexual exploitation is it. But the problem is that when women are trafficked for sexual exploitation or for sex work, it's usually for prostitution. And if you're trafficked for prostitution, you are afforded certain rights. You're allowed to go to the doctor, you're allowed to go to home affairs, you can get certain services, etc. You've literally treated as a citizen. The problem is that prostitutes do not get those rights. They will get locked up and they go to jail. When you are trafficked for prostitution, you have freedom or you have immunity from prosecution. Now the problem is that how many prostitutes or sex workers are we going to get? They're going to say, I've been trafficked. Oh, from where? From Nice now. two roads down the road, which could be an issue, because that was raised also when it comes to debt bondage and gangsterism, specifically in the Western Cape, where some girls have been sold by their families to gangsters and then they've been trafficked or whatever. But I mean, there's a clear disparity between how we treat sex workers, just as sex workers or just as prostitutes, and how we treat women who've been trafficked for prostitution. Trafficking for prostitution gives certain rights to that victim, and just prostitution gives no rights.
Just to pick up on the other issue around Ukutwala, the Children's Act does prohibit forced marriages of children, and there's a penalty, there's a fee in place. So even the Children's Act, they don't use the word Ukutwala, but in terms of a description, nobody picked that up during the submissions either. So now we'll move on in terms of chapter by chapter. So chapter one. In terms of trafficking, again, as you've indicated, they list several issues under what is considered to be trafficking. But again, it concludes with an overemphasis on sexual exploitation. And there were many recommendations by the submissions to expand on the issue around forced labor and the notable absence of trafficking for human body parts. In terms of the objects of the Act, they make reference to both prevention and protection of victims of trafficking, but throughout the bill, we've seen there's less emphasis on what needs to be done to ensure the protection of the victim. There are very few clauses that look at that. In terms of the intersectoral committee, again, in terms of who's involved, our department not mentioned, and that this committee is responsible for draft national policy framework. Policy framework is important, but the key issue here is why draft is going to take responsibility for ensuring that it's taken to finality, number one. Number two, is no meat and emphasis around this policy framework as to when will it be implemented, who will monitor it, who will evaluate it. So even though there's a mechanism to create it, the other important elements to ensure that it actually happens is not in the bill. What I've done in the larger document that I've submitted is when I looked at the Child Justice Act, they also have a national policy framework, but they have very clear provisions as to with to implement the Justice Act, who's going to be responsible, well, when it should be done and how it should be done. So maybe that can be used as a model of best practice to say, well, how do we strengthen this legislation by looking at other pieces where they talk to policy framework. In chapter 2 around the public awareness, many of the NGOs indicated that they welcomed it. However, in order to undertake public awareness, you require adequate resources. And one of the clauses which looks at funding issues clearly says with unavailable resources. So in other words, public awareness will happen depending on what's left in the envelope. And again, in terms of involvement of the role of the NGOs, it indicates where appropriate. So in other words, it's discretionary. Whoever is involved in terms of the intersectoral committee or wants to collaborate with NGOs, it's where appropriate, so where they feel, who they will invite, and where. And again, once you open that avenue, it will not automatically ensure that all the relevant stakeholders are present. In terms of Chapter 3, I'll mention a few things and then I'll ask Gary to provide more input. The submissions indicated that this particular area requires strengthening. There was a disjuncture between the length of the sentence and the payment incurred, and that there needs to be synergy with the minimum sentence requirements. They referred to issues around when looking at the sentencing, that the significance of the role of the offender needs to be noted. And again, what does that mean? If it's not ironed up clearly in the regulations, it leaves it open to interpretation. And again, what Joy indicated that which we should highlight is that in terms of the penalty, to what extent was the victim's life placed in harm? To what extent was it life threatened to her? I'll just hand up to Gary again.
I just need clarity on what I need to explain. The disparity between the sentencing recommendations and the legislation is that, that came out of the submissions, is that there's no correlation between the financial amount, between the fine, and the amount of years. I mean, that is up to the discretion of the judge, but they're saying it's 100,000 or 6 months, which I've never in my days in the courtroom, I've never seen such a difference. I mean, 100,000 is usually 3 years or 100,000, which is the maximum of the district courts. But I've never, so there's no correlation between those two. And then also, the legislature, the state departments, specifically, when sending through bills to parliament, try and stay away or stay as far away as possible from minimum sentencing, because it's a really big. What the Constitutional Court has an unfavorable view of the whole around minimum sentencing. So I think that's the issue here. That's what the Department of Justice tried to stay absolutely away and say this is the discretion. And I think a lot of the Act has got to do with that as well. That it's up to the discretion of the courts because there's so many different views, and it's very wide ranging.
Moving into Chapter 4, and the first component, which is around reporting and referral of children. One, it makes for a compulsory reporting of children who are trafficked, and that there are resource implications for that. Because if it's compulsory, would identify, are these officials trained, how would they be trained, by when would they be trained, and again, as I indicated initially, that there's no clause that looks at norms and standards around the training of all these officials. In terms of referral of the child in 24 hours based on the police official who would know on reasonable grounds whether this child is trafficked or not is problematic. Firstly, the Children's Act clearly stipulates when a child is in need of care and protection, whether the child has been abused or is found maltreated or neglected. And that for a child found in a particularly vulnerable space, clearly, is being trafficked, that child should be removed immediately, and that if it's depending a police investigation within 24 hours. Research has shown in submissions too that many of the victims, not only children, are often very traumatized. They may not be in a space to be able to divulge all the information right there and then. And particularly for children, you need specialists to be able to work with the child, develop a relationship, which may take anything between 3 and 6 months for a child to actually feel trust, to be able to indicate what has happened to him or her. The key issue which we also noted was that even though within the chapter for adult victims, they place emphasis around the safety and urgency. So in other words, ensure the safety of the adult victim and that assessment should be done with urgency. This is not reflected for children. In terms of the reporting referrals of children, there's no indication as to what should happen around the certification process. The adult section talks to an accredited organization who should look at doing assessment and coming up with a certificate, but no mention is made of what the implications are for children. And again, as I indicated previously, for a child who has been trafficked, who then turns 18 and is still in the country because the case has not been concluded, will assist the child then in terms of whether the child wants to remain within South Africa, in terms of being a refugee, asylum seeker, or even in terms of repatriation. So that is clearly a gap. In terms of the reporting and referral of adult victims, particular emphasis is placed on accredited organizations to be able to do that. But there is no clear criteria as to what constitutes an accredited organization. And for many of the NGOs who came to the submissions, they're currently doing the service. So there seems to be a disjuncture that now a new process is set up to say you now have to register as an organization for something which you already have been doing. So to what extent is that cumbersome and an additional administrative burden on the state? And also, what are the implications of who assesses where, how, and on what? In terms of the certification, that's an assessment done and then a certificate is issued. Submissions indicated to what extent is that not labelling for the victim? And again, within these clauses, it indicates an accredited organization may do particular things. And the emphasis between may and must is very important, because may, in terms of what the state will offer, leaves it open to discretion, whereas must compels the state to do particular things. And if accredited organizations, and to date it's mostly NGOs, are supposed to be responsible for providing these issues, So in terms of accredited organizations who are supposed to be providing this particular service, they require funding. And again, within the current bill, there's very little mentioned around that. Then looking at the provision of healthcare services, there's only one clause in the bill at the moment, and that refers to provision of healthcare services in relation to foreign nationals, which is problematic. It takes us back to the skewed emphasis on trafficking of victims coming into the country, but not taking note of victims of African citizens who are trafficked between provinces and within provinces. And why is that problematic? For a victim who is identified, firstly, they require medical assessment. Many of them are traumatized. If they have been sexually exploited, a medical assessment has to be undertaken to determine whether they require any additional prophylactic treatment. If they are pregnant, what are the implications? Submissions have also indicated that many of the victims, when they arrive at shelters or arrive at an NGO, they also have a drug dependency problem. And there's no provision in the bill at the moment that looks at victims and referral to drug rehab. More importantly is the link to the victim empowerment program, which is absent. Gary and I attended a seminar by Molo Sungololo in which Justice provided some input around the bill to a group of civil society organizations. And Justice indicated that 220 care centers are there to provide services. But based on our domestic violence hearings, based on our visits to Limpopo, we do know that in terms of 220 care centers, they provide a particular service to victims who have been sexually assaulted. So what happens in a case of a victim who's been trafficked, not for sexual exploitation purposes, but is also traumatized and requires assessment? Where would they go to? Where would they go to service, for services? What is glaringly absent in this particular chapter 4 is emphasis on protection. Protection of the victim, whether they're at a safe house, protection of the service providers, and so forth. And then again, in terms of shelter and housing, it's also absent from this particular chapter. What happens in a case where a child is trafficked and they're alone? They'll go to a child abuse care center. Or what happens if an adult's been trafficked and they're with a child? Where would they go to? And then generally, adults who've been trafficked, where would they be sent? So moving in on to chapter 5, in terms of recovery and reflection, they stipulated a 90-day reprieve, which admissions have noted is too little. In terms of the certification process and the issuing of certificate, there's no link between whether you, when you're a foreign national, when you receive a certificate, and what happens in that period. Now that's linked to the status as an asylum seeker, and that should be linked. In terms of temporary residence, in that particular section of the chapter, again, there's no implications for children. And then I'll ask Gary to give the input around the particular clause that refers to humanitarian grounds.
members, one of the provisions in the bill states that the Minister of Home Affairs may extend the period of temporary residency based on humanitarian grounds. That's a very open-ended statement. One needs to determine what exactly are they going to deal with humanitarian grounds in regulations by the Department of Home Affairs, or is he going to deal with it on an ad hoc basis where, as and when these victims come up, and what are those criteria going to be to determine whether it is a humanitarian basis or not? Are we talking about the Geneva Convention? Would he determine then, based on the fact that there's violence and crime, that the victim is going to be attacked, or there's going to be a negative impact, should that victim be repatriated once that 6 months, that 6 month time is finished? Or, but I mean, what are those grounds?
Then moving on to chapter 6, again it's the issue around safe houses and victims. In order for these to be implemented, it requires adequate funding. Again, with these safe houses and shelters, what are the implications for protection of the victims there as well as the service providers until such time that the offenders are apprehended? And again, implications for when children are alone or when they're with family. In terms of Chapter 7, compensation. There's no indication as to what is the compensation for children who have been trafficked, whether these children are alone, who would administer the money, and if children have family, to who would the money go to in the family, because that could open itself up to a huge range of problems as well. And in terms of the compensation, again, it indicates the court may. And that's problematic, so it leaves it up to the discretion of the court. And then just lastly, the Children's Act that I indicated as a particular chapter that deals with trafficking, as well as the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act. The intention is that when this bill comes into effect, Chapter 18 of the Children's Act will be repealed, and the section within the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act will also be repealed. So just to give you an indication, so the Sexual Offences and Related Matters has particular provisions and it defines. So it would be important to establish, we look at the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act, are these revisions captured adequately in the canon bill? And the same applies to the Children's Act. It's a whole chapter. So the assumption is that the entire chapter should have been captured in the bill. So it's literally having to go section by section against a clause to see where that's been done. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
Thank you to both of you, Kashif and Gary. Can we open this for discussion as well? Can we have comments?
Thank you, Chair. I don't know what to comment. Just to say to the researchers again, I think they've done a splendid job. We should actually empower us when we engage with the injustice. For me, I think it's great that we
I got it now.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah. Chair, yes, I think the bill is a very good bill. Might be one or two little amendments here, but of course, the problem comes in the implementation of the bill. For example, I see on the research units on page 11, it says absence of costing. The child youth care centres are a big problem. The province I come from, just recently they've taken the provincial government report. This is the NGOs, because most of them provide the accommodation, because they were only being paid like 40 rand per person per child per day instead of 120, which keeps them there, and it's a watershed thing. They won their case, I might add, the NGOs did. But the problem is always the implementation of these. So there's no costing. Who's going to provide the shelter? If you're looking towards the NGOs in our province, it's a no-go. They pull. So that's where the problem lies. But otherwise, the actual bill is wonderful. Thanks.
I think also the issue of the lead department, that also needs to be clarified. Because at this stage, it's not clear who is the lead in the whole legislation. Sorry. Can you share that with us? For now, I think this will serve as a guide when we go and attend that, but I think we'll find time in our own leisure to do our own homework. But I think this will really serve as a guide.
Chairperson, just to pick up on the lead department, with reference to our own department, maybe it's for the committee to consider whether they should be taking the lead, because the bowl's intersectoral, it's cross-cutting. If you look at the responsibility of the department, in terms of treaty compliance, the CRC, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, African Charter, we've looked at CEDAW. The department has a role to play in terms of the reporting. It has direct gender implications, children, youth. That, in terms of monitoring and assessing the extent to which departments are supposed to do what they're supposed to do, with respect to women, children, persons with disabilities, and that they, to an extent, can play a coordinatory role. And I think that should be helpful to hear from the committee, the extent to which that is something to consider as a recommendation.
Are you saying that our department should be the lead? Is that what you say? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Kashifa has done it all for me. That is what I wanted to know. I will get the recommendation.
But a lead in terms of monitoring or implementation?
It comes back to the, I mean, our department is not an implementing agency. It's there, the responsibility is for coordination, monitoring. Just as in the case of the Domestic Violence Act, they do have a role to play to see to what extent all the departments are not fulfilling their rights with, as duty bearers in relation to women and children and all the other target groups. So they do have a coordinatory function and monitoring. But in terms of, and monitoring is linked to issues around implementation, but they per se won't be implementing services. It goes back to the role of the department, their mandate, and where they begin to find themselves in terms of intersectoral collaboration, which is one of the key things which they've been pushing for.
I would agree, but not for the department to be the lead. Something will be interesting to the capacity to be the lead. This, to me, this is similar to the Domestic Violence Act. It has the SAPS, justice, social development, health. But also, for me, it didn't go down well at that hearing. I would have expected all other departments to be there, but they were not there. It was just justice. Our department was not there. Health was not there. Social development was not there. So how are they going to implement if they're not there to understand their role? And also another concern that I would have is whichever department will be responsible for leading, I mean, what type of instrument do we have to force compliance? I think that was not clear, too. Maybe that is one of the issues that we could raise. What tangible instrument do they have to force their compliance?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think that's a very important question because it actually comes back to what Kashifa was saying. When you look at the domestic violence, you know, I think someone has to be responsible there. It's not very clear. And I think it will give us an opportunity to force out to the Justice Department to come out clear as to whether who is responsible and what is their relationship with these other, you know, departments. To ensure, because many things, you know, did not take place because before this ministry, Justice was responsible to ensure that these effects and they were in that place. So maybe it's where we can be to make sure we must force Justice to say who is responsible and whether there is budget for that, you know, for them to implement.
How do we now procedurally now? I just want to check how do we make sure that when we deliberate the next time on this, these other departments are there? How do we do that?
Ma'am, it would be the chairperson who would have to then write a formal letter on behalf of both committees or your committee, whichever, to the chair of the Justice Committee requesting the presence of the relevant departments and maybe those relevant chairpersons or members of those relevant committees as well, because it's critically important that all relevant stakeholders are involved in this because they have a specific role to play and the Act places on them certain obligations, social development, police, home affairs, international relations, health, social development, I think I've mentioned that, and women and children as well. I mean, they're in terms of the level of service provision, because there are lots of services in terms of victims of trafficking and a set of minimum standards and how you treat women, because we know we have a problem with the Domestic Violence Act and the way in which victims are treated there, and they're being questioned and interrogated by men. Those questions are being asked in public. So how do we ensure that women and children are not victims of secondary victimization because of this act? So I think it's critical that our department is there as well in those discussions. It's critical that the department is there.
Okay. So that's
all
about that.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you to Gary. I think that is what we need to consider. However, I must say that we can all remember what we've done from the Portfolio Committee side during the public hearings on the Domestic Violence Act, requesting from 5 departments to give us a breakdown of the budget so that we as a committee can see how much is in fact budgeted. We would have at least be by this time way ahead to know who's doing their work and who's not doing their work. So I don't know, I just feel at this point, maybe after this meeting, Chairperson, that we as a committee get together to put something together and urge these departments to respond on us and not take months to answer us. I just wanted to add that because I'm very unhappy because we get together, we discuss these, we put in these requests and we are just not regarded important enough. We're not getting the acknowledgement as the Portfolio Committee on this minister, on the ministry.
I'm sure. Are you referring to the Domestic Violence?
Yes. Because remember what?
Okay.
We requested last year. We requested that they give us a breakdown of their budget. 5 departments: Justice, Health, Education, and the researchers can confirm this, and everybody, every other member can. And we haven't received any. Social Development. I've been in Social Development's meeting the other day. And one of the officials there then said, but they have sent their report. I haven't sent it because I asked the question, so I would know. And I there also stressed that that we should get these reports in time, so for us to be able to move on and make impact.
Are you saying that because? You know, the questions that are asked in the House also sometimes are not good enough because, you know, there's limited time in which to interact with the relevant minister. But don't you think it would be better rather than to write? Why don't we call these departments just in one meeting? I would suggest that we call them.
We call them. I'm just saying that in addition.
Chairperson, I'm saying what I'm saying in addition. We call them in, but we must also then check them on the fact that they have not responded. You understand what I mean? Because we can't continue to get these departments in, because it's not just the 5 departments. I would even further suggest that we leave economic, economics and finance. We need to have them here, together with the other departments. When we talk about costing and talking about financing of these acts. So it's not just having the social cluster or the governance cluster. We should have as many departments here when we want to address this. So it's in addition that I'm just reminding all of us that we've done our part, but we do not get the reaction that we're supposed to.
I think what you're saying makes sense. So we will send something to them requesting that they come before the committee. And our role would be to check whether or not they have budgeted for the legislation you're talking about, that is the Domestic Violence Act. But for now, let us leave finance, because I think finance have done their share, but it's for the department to distribute the funds into proper channels. Not unless when they come before us, they tell us that we have not received enough from. But I think, Nelissa, you take that point that maybe, I don't know when, but soon, can you call the department, invite them, and stating what we need them for, so they'll come prepared in order for us to monitor. Otherwise, really, our sitting here is just futile. On that note, is there anything more that needs to be shared with us?
Gary? Just a point of clarity, Chairperson. I'm wondering, are we inviting the departments in terms of the trafficking legislation, or are we inviting it in terms of the
municipalities? I think we will be inviting the department in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. The trafficking, we'll discuss that when we go for deliberations. But I think that is one of the recommendations that we are going to make as the two committees, that we are proposing that in our deliberations, may we have these other departments that are part of the legislation to come and be part of our deliberations. I think that's what we're saying. Am I correct? Can we formally close the meeting? Thank you.
Thank you.